Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Chet, and as we promised, we get the day started off with a pure Ritchie-style Fight on the Helik Perek. So we're up to Perek Osin Pasin. You remember about Osin Pasin because we've had it numerous times. And this is a different type of mechitza that we're talking about now. This is a mechitza which is actually a mechitza d'oraita, despite the fact that it hardly seems to be here at all. And that is talking about a violation of everything that we thought until now in terms of omed merubah laparutz, that we thought we need, or at least omed kiparutz, in which, because of the fact that we have all four mechitzot, we do? Yes, we do. We can use an L-shaped board that gives us at each corner one amma in every direction. And then if we have what is the size of a petach, no, that petach has 10 ammas, whether that's the size that we're ready to accept a petach that's larger than 10 ammas, 13 and a third ammas, but whatever the size is, if we could see the entire thing as petachim, and we have a real mechitza on all four sides, then we're not going to get into the question bichlal of omed merubah laparutz, because there is no parutz. It's really all mechitzot once it's described as a closed-in area. This new idea of diyu is going to turn out to be important in the Gemara in a very strange way, but diyu has that aspect of dualism. Because of it, we're going to get down to actually the roots of dualism in terms of Maaseh Bereishis and the fact that we have a different way of looking at things where our brain fills things in and appears to us as being dualistic. Anyway, so these pasim lebeiraot, which we talked about many times, is arba diyumdim, which are nirim kishmone, divrei Rebbe Yehuda. So we've got basically four gamma-shaped boards, L-shaped boards, and therefore they look like eight, even though they're connected to each other. They look like eight separate mechitzas, because at each corner it goes in both directions, which means that every single side has a total of two amot worth of wall, one amma on one side, one amma on the other side. Rebbe Meir says, no, that's not enough. You actually would have to have eight boards, which would be looking like 12 boards. Now, what that means is that he holds that in between the two sides, you need to stick in one extra board in the middle, so that you have the four diyumdim, which look like eight, plus one board in the middle of each one of those four, which gives you actually 12. And what it looks like, we've got the eight and then the other four. So what we really have in terms of pieces of wood is eight pieces of wood. But it looks like it's covering 12 different spaces. And these were arba'a diyumdim, which equals eight, and arba'a pshutim, which equals four. That's Rebbe Meir Shita. We'll see more about what size he's talking about. V'govhan asarat vachim, like any other mechitza, it has to be 10 tvachim high. And rochvan has to be 6 tvachim, which is one arm in each direction. As far as how thick they are, it could be anything. Ovyan koshahu. And the maximum, the distance between any two boards, would be kimlo shtei rivkot shel shalosh shalosh bakar. According to Rebbe Meir, remember, we're limited to 10 amot, and therefore, if we have two teams, each team being 3 bakar, we end up with the size of 10 amot, as we'll see in the Gemara. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, no, you can have two teams of 4. And when we say that they are teams, what we mean is that they are tightly tied close to each other. We don't have a lot of space between them. So they're kishurot, lomaturot. But as far as the space between the two teams, you have to have enough space, and that allows us a little bit more. Achat nichneset v'achat yotzet. You can have one team that's leaving the area, one team that's going into the area. Remember, the entire issue over here is that we're trying to figure out how to get water out of a Rishus HaYochid into a Rishus HaRabi. And in order to do that, we have to turn the area around the Rishus HaYochid, which is the Bor, and make it into a Rishus HaYochid as well. And it's got to be a real Rishus HaYochid. And so therefore, what we do is we use our Arba Diyumdim, which give it a din of four mechitzot, and we treat that as Rishus HaYochid, even though you could say, technically speaking, what do we do about the question of people living here? We consider the use for the water as being something that is a human use, and therefore it's set aside for human inhabitation, and we don't view it as a karmelit. We give it an actual din of a Rishus HaYochid. Now, you'll note that the word that's used are beiraot. Beiraot generally means wells, not just cisterns. And that's going to be a big question. Are we going to aser cisterns? The question that we have to take into consideration, the two questions. This special heter would immediately lose its validity if there were no water in the wells, right? So the question would be, therefore, would we make this a heter even on something which is very likely to lose its water at one point, and that would be a cistern? Maybe this is only a heter for something where we don't have to worry about that kind of thing, where it's a natural source of water that is not generally going to go dry. And then there's another question. Is this something that is only mutter when there is a rabim? Or would it be mutter even for yachid to go in? The difference would be, if this is an area that belongs to a yachid, then if it does go dry, there's no one to remind him and to tell him you mustn't carry in that area. So there may be a difference between a yachid and a rabim as well, in terms of the heter. These are things we need to think about, and the Gemara is going to be dealing with them. Now, what about if you want it to be closer than that to the bar? You can make it as close as you want. So mutter lahakriv lebe'er, but there needs to be one thing that you need to be careful about. Bavachite para roshava ruba bifnim bishota. You can't make it so close that to bring in an individual animal would expose you to the risk of the animal backing up and you moving the water after it and taking it to Rishus HaRabim. In other words, we need to be secure about the fact that even if you're only going to make this big enough for a single animal, but it really has to be enough for that animal to be mostly inside of the Rishus so that you don't come to accidentally carry out into Rishus HaRabim. So that would be the maximum. Now, mutar laharchik, also, you can make things as far away as you want from the bar, but with one condition. You would have to then, the moment that you go between the maximum of the 13 and the third, according to Rabbi Yehuda, or 10, according to Rabbi Meir, that's when you would have to insert another board in between to make sure you don't exceed the area of a petach. But I don't care how big you make it. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, sure we care how big we make it. I mean, don't we treat this as a makom that is not really hukaf l'dira? Therefore, it's a second-rate kind of use, a second-rate kind of mechitza, and because of that, we should maximize it at a size of what? The standard Beit Satayim, the size of the Mishkan, the chutzah of the Mishkan, which was the 5,000 square amot, right? And therefore, I say, you can't go beyond an enclosed area of a Beit Satayim. Amrulo say the Chachamim to Rabbi Yehuda, no, that's not true. The mokum of the pasim, which is the be'er, is considered to be an actual place of diur because it's used by people, that Rashi understands it, used by people for their drinking water. That is one of the fundamental tashbishei dirah. And therefore, lo amru beit satayim, the limitations that we were talking about at the end of the previous parak, of where you have a mechitza that is a ru'ua, or a utilization for diur that was ru'ua, that was only for things like a gina, which is a garden, nobody lives there, or a karfaf, which is things that you have like a storage area outside of town. It's a little yard that you got out there. Well, you don't live in that area. But if it's something that you make use of for your livestock or for your storage, and you're constantly going in and out of there, and certainly over here when you have water there, ima yadir, o sahar, o mukta, o chatser, I don't care how big it is. Afilu beit chamisha kurin, I mean, this thing could be absolutely gigantic, and it would still be considered to be mutter, completely mutter, because the idea over here would be that it's made for dira. So obviously that was part of the takona of the whole concept of what it means when we're matir, the type of thing that normally we wouldn't have. And so even an area that is tremendous, not only Beit Sa'ah, but something that was enormous, would also be mutter, even up to, I mean, a base core is basically over 75 times it works. Yeah, it's 70 times bigger than a Beit Sa'ah, than two Beit Sa'ah. So it's 150 times bigger, but you were talking about Beit Sa'ah Tanya. So I don't care how big it is, or it could be even 10 Beit Kura. I don't care. Even if it's 150 times bigger than the Beit Sa'ah Tanya, it doesn't matter, because we never made any type of limitations on human dwelling spaces that have proper mechitzas. And this is considered to be a proper mechitza as opposed to the mechitzot gruot. And therefore, mutar laharchi kol shehu, because of that, you can go as big as you want, as long as you don't get beyond the maximum size of a petach, either a libra Rebbe Meir 10 or mamas, or a libra Rebbe Yehuda 13 and a third. Okay, now, the question over here is, how do we understand that word beiraot? Do beiraot mean wells, or do beiraot mean cisterns, borot? It's just a general term of a place to take out water. And that boils down to the question of what you're going to do when the well runs dry. Because if you continue to utilize that area, if the cistern would run dry, then you'll be utilizing mechitzas that are not really usable mechitzas, because we're only metakein these mechitzas for the use of water. And therefore, if there's no one around to tell you, there's a bigger chance that you'll lose it. Of course, if it's a cistern, it's more likely to run dry than a well. And this accounts for three different approaches to the Mishnah. And the way that we get to the three different approaches to the Mishnah is we take a look at the three shitot that are given later on, actually. And those three shitot, we try to fit them into the Mishnah. And in fitting them into the Mishnah, we can figure out how to read that word beiraot and how makpid we are specifically on beiraot. So let's start with shita number one. Shita number one is the shita of Hananya. Shall we assume that the Mishnah is not like Hananya? Because in the Braita, it says, you can make pasin for a boar. Ooh, a boar. No, this is a boar, not a be'er. So according to the Tanakhama here, you can make pasin even for a boar. But when it comes to the Shayara, and this is now the transition from the last parak and the issues of Bechitzot Ru'u'ot, when you come to a Shayara, you can't use pasin. Over there, you have to have something that actually covers the whole area. And those would be the kula by a Shayara, would be the fact that you use these straps that go around like the sukkahs that people build. Whereas Hananya said, here's where we're in trouble. Hananya says, no, you can't make pasin for a boar. Oh, whoa. Can't make pasin for a boar. But the Mishnah says you can. Says the Gemara, no, it doesn't. The Mishnah says you can make pasin for a be'er. So the Mishnah may very well be going exactly like Hananya, bor lechud and be'er lechud. And therefore, according to this, the meaning of the Mishnah would be specifically, you're allowed to be somech on pasei beiraot, but you could not put on pasim on borot, and that would be consistent with Hananya 100%. There's another way of saying this over, in which we're more medayik, and it goes like this, ikri amri. Since in the Braita, it did not say that Hananya holds, you can make chavalim lebor and pasim lebe'er. And that's Mashmah Hananya. I mean, if that's what he's coming to address, the difference between a boar and a be'er, he ought to say so, right? Instead, he only differentiates between a shayara and a boar. I mean, which seems he's lumping boar and be'er together according to this approach. And if that's the case, he seems to say, you can't ever use pasim for this stuff. So mechlad el Hananya lo shna boar v'lo shna be'er, only use chavalim the way you would use it in a camp, and it's got to be completely surrounded. You cannot use pasim. If that's the case, there'd be no way to make the Mishnah work out according to Hananya, right? So this way it's a little bit sharper, because we've already taken into consideration in the question about Hananya that it doesn't seem, there's obviously a difference between boar and be'er, but he doesn't seem to hold of it. Answers the Gemara, in this version, not true. Hananya most definitely understands that there's a difference between a boar and a be'er. The only reason that Hananya only addressed himself to a boar is because that was what the Tanakhama in the Braita started with. Tanakhama in the Braita says, you can make pasin for a boar, and you can make chavalim for shayara, to which he responds, look, I'm not coming here to tell you where you can make pasin, but I'm telling you, you certainly can't make pasin where you say you can make pasin. The only place you say that you make the chavalim, that's what you always have to make. So you make chavalim, whether it's talking about the shayara or whether it's talking about the boar. Now you want to ask me where you can make pasim. Look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you can make pasim Lebeiraot. So this is just a little bit more detailed. It comes out the same way. Well, as I say, what we're going to do is we're going to examine all three shitas that distinguish between different types of borot, beiraot, or rabim, or yachid, and see how each one of them fits into the Mishnah, which of course gives us, even though we're pretending to question, does it mean the Mishnah is not lying? That's not the real intent. The real intent over here is to see how there may be three very different approaches to the Mishnah. So, okay, approach number one is that the Mishnah is only allowing us to make these pasin when it comes to a be'er and not to a bor. Furthermore, approach number one does not distinguish between if it's owned by a yochid or by a rabbin. It's the same halacha as long as it's a be'er, not a bor. That's Hananya. Now let's take the second approach. Shall we now assume that the Mishnah is not going according to Rabbi Akiva? Because later on in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva obviously says something very different. And later on it says, whether you're dealing with a public be'er or whether you're dealing with a public bor. So whether it's a well or a cistern, or for that matter, whether you're dealing with a private well, not a private cistern. So those three things you can use pasim for. Why? Because in all of those cases, there's a reason for you not to have to worry about what you're going to do when it runs dry, either because wells don't run dry, or because if it's a cistern, which does run dry, it's shel harabim. And if it's shel harabim, then somebody is going to be omit on the fact, oops, we can't use this anymore because it ran dry. So if you're missing both issues, it's also a yachid and it's also a bor. So if it runs dry, which is likely to happen at one point in the year, there's not going to be anybody who's going to pay attention to it because he doesn't realize that there's a different halacha. That you wouldn't be able to do. Okay, so this is basically the Mishnah that says later on, and this is Rabbi Akiva Shita, that in three out of the four cases, you can make pasim. But in the fourth case, where it's lacking both advantages, it's a bor which can run dry, and it's a yachid which won't be noticeable, there you can only work it out if you make an actual mechitza, normal mechitza, 10 tefachim high, then you can carry out of it into a rishus hayachid, which is a regular rishus hayachid. So says Rabbi Akiva, and that certainly means, apparently, that it's not like the Mishnah. Our Mishnah seems to be very careful to use the word wells, beiraot. Later on, Rabbi Akiva was talking about borot, and he specifies four different types. I mean, that's much more detailed than our Mishnah, which it seems to be saying that it's only borot, not for only beiraot, not for any kind of borot, even public borot. So that's against Rabbi Akiva. No, maybe that's the way to read the Mishnah. The way to read the Mishnah is afilo tamer Rabbi Akiva. The Mishnah wants to avoid the question of whether it's public or private. The only way it can avoid that question and keep things simple is by talking about wells, because wells, it doesn't matter whether it's public or private because they're unlikely to go dry. So therefore, the Mishnah may very well agree with Rabbi Akiva, and it waits for the Mishnah later on to explain it at greater length, where Rabbi Akiva takes our Mishnah, which kept things simple. If you're talking about wells, it's fine. You want to start talking about cisterns? Well, then it depends. Whether it's a rabbin or yachid, we'll talk about that later. And that later is Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, a be'er mayim chayim, which is psikale, meaning I could just talk about it simply. It's clear. I don't need to define it. Lo shna de rabim, lo shna de yachid. It makes absolutely no difference. So that's what I'm coming to tell you. Once I get into the question of a bor, which is mayim mechunasim, it's just stored water. We're over there. It does make a big difference whether it's public or private. The Mishnah is not dealing with that. Pow, lokatani. Okay, the third possibility is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, he actually says in that Mishnah, differently than Rabbi Akiva, and he says, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Omer, oh no, you have to have both advantages. First of all, that it's unlikely to go dry, so it's talking about a well, and it's also public, so that in the event that something would change, it's a public issue and people are not going to end up using it. You can't just be sumich on one or the other, that it's a well, so what's the chances it'll go dry, or it's a cistern, but it belongs to Rabbi. No, we need both. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, you can only make pasim for a be'er of a rabim. Ah, now over here, it uses the language of bira'ot. Osim pasim a bira'ot. Bira'ot seems to be saying, wherever they are, right? Any kind of well, which would imply either Yachid or Rabim, I don't care, which of course was the way that Hananiah was learning it, right? So I don't care was the way Rabbi Akiva was learning it too. And therefore, since over here it says Biraot, it's Mashma Loshna de Rabim Veloshna de Yachid, which is not consistent with Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. And therefore, we have yet a third way of understanding the Mishnah, and that is you could say it's going like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. When it says Beiraot, it means only public Beiraot. And the word Beiraot, which says any kind, we're saying plural. Plural doesn't mean any kind. Plural means two wells. I'm going to tell you what kind of wells. Whatever the wells are, but those wells, in general, are wells, right? So that's Beiraot Alma, which we often find is the usage. Okay, so in other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, you can use wells, all kinds of wells. You can use even cisterns if they're public. Hananiah says, you can use wells, true, all kinds of wells. But when it comes to cisterns, not at all. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says, you can use the Pasei Beiraot only for wells and only for public wells. And we were able to fit in all of those varied shitas into the Mishnah, so Rebbe has done it again, left the definition of the Mishnah wide open. So now getting to the curious usage of this word diyumdin. And what's diyumdin? So the nature of diyumdin is that they are dual amudim. Diyu amudim is diyumdin. So this idea that we use the word dual is actually something that is found in many different cases in the Torah and clearly has some type of reference to a fundamental way in which we see things as being split into two when they are actually not really two. So let me explain to you, where do we find that lush? So there are other places. There's a Mishnah in Demai, and the Mishnah, this is the opening Mishnah in Demai, that actually is a reference to Diyumdim in a sense, because it too uses the word dual. And of course, what else would we use but Greek for that? So if you want to talk about dualism, we talk about in Demai a certain type of fig. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol hashitin peturin chutz min hadyuftera. Dyuftera, interesting. So what would dualism have to do with a type of shitim, a type of fig? And when it says that dyuftera are not putter from Demai, why are the normal shitim? Shitim are like these wild figs of low quality. They're not really very valuable. So even an Amoritz figures, what am I going to do? I'm going to lose 10 cents to take off Meiser. I might as well take off Meiser. But when you come to a Diuftera, the Diuftera is high class. What makes it high class? Omar Ula, it's an Ilana Osa Dio Peirot B'Shana. So it has a dual crop. And because of that, we see each one of these crops as being valuable. And that he doesn't want to lose out on. Another example of duo is Amr Rabbi ben Elazar, is the, once again, we're taking us back to the human condition and Maaser Bereishis, and here we get into this fundamental psychological issue of dualism in terms of our sexual identity, which takes us back to all types of early psychology and the immediate post-Freudian period, which talks about Diyu Partzufim, that was Diyu Partzuf Panim Hayola Adam Harishon, that the original human was both male and female. Shenema achor v'kedem tzar tani. So you have formed me front and rear. So how does that work? So we basically have a machlokas, as we had before, k'tiv. Vayiven Hashem Elokim et ha-tzela. So what exactly is this tzela? So this, again, gets us into Jungian issues. Rav and Shmuel, chanamer partzof. So one of them tainas that this is a full male identity and a full female identity joined. And that is the partzuf that was turned into a separate identity and a separate male identity and a separate female identity. Whereas Chadamar Zanav, no, actually, the idea of forming a female is made out of an extension of the original maleness. And that's a zanav. I won't ask you to recall again psychologically how to say zanav in Latin. But that is obviously part of the entire Freudian and Jungian issue. So, Bishu Amalamandi Omer Partsuf. If you think about it as an entirely different figure, that explains Ocher v'Kedem Tzartani. But Laman Diomer Zanav, I mean, it isn't really true of Ocher v'Kedem. I mean, a Zanav is not an entire different back. So what would be the Ocher v'Kedem? No, Ocher v'Kedem over here is in terms of time. And it would mean Kidreba Ami. Omer Reba Ami, Ocher l'maase bereshit, Kedem l'puranut. So even though I was the last thing that was created in Maaseh Bereishis, I was the first thing to suffer in Maaseh Bereishis. Now, Bishlam Ocher l'maase bereshit, I understand that Adam Rishon was created the last of the entire story on Erev Shabbos. But in what sense are we calling him the first ones to suffer? I mean, do you mean because of the Kolola after the Eitz Hadas? That's not true. The Knochash was Kolol first, right? So, Ilema Mishum Kolola, Hobet Chila Nitkalel Nachash. Only at the very end was Chava and then Adam. Because what are you telling me, that I was cursed before? Elala Mabul. Maybe what it's talking about, therefore, must be the first natural disaster that wiped out the Yimach et Kol HaYakum Asher al Pnei Adama. And over there, indeed, it says, Me Adam ad Beima, which means that the first thing to be destroyed was to bin Adam. And it was not that everything was destroyed simultaneously, because then you could just say everything. But the point over here is you want to say, we started with Adam, and then everything else got wiped out as well. Note that there are two yudim in the word vayitzer, train yudim. Now that means each one of those we understand is a separate yitzira. So the double yud is the dualism in creation, which is the dyu. Dyu would be two yuds, and that would be a zocher and a keva, which makes sense. But according to them, whoever the Maan D'Omer was, we never identified who said what, but whoever the Maan D'Omer was who said zanav, what is the meaning of the two yuds, since we don't see it as a dualism in yitzira? There is a dualism, but it's a different dualism. It's Kedem Reb Shimon ben Pazi. D'Omer Reb Shimon ben Pazi, it's the dualism in the human condition. It's the oily mi yitzri, oily mi yotzri. So I'm torn in two completely different directions. Whatever I do, I always suffer, and I feel myself being torn into two different levels of being, in which either I'm following HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then I'm being driven crazy by my desires, or I'm following my desires, and I'm being driven crazy by everything about me, which is desirous of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Bishlom Alman Yomar Part Suv, Finally Dekliv Zachar Unikeva Bira'am. If you're telling me that initially there was two completely different identities that were merged, it makes sense to say that it was Zachar v'Nekeva from the very beginning, and that's what it says, Zachar v'Nekeva Bira'am, at the beginning of Bria. But if, in fact, it was only a Zanav, so then in what sense do we say it was so created up front, Zachar v'Nekeva Bira'am, if that were not the case? Ah, that could be also understood the way Rabbi Abu did. The Rabbi Abu Rami, he pointed it out that it sounds like it's a contradiction. On the one hand, it says Zachar v'Nekeva Bira'am, but when it describes the first story of creation, it says B'Tzelem Elohim bara oto. Oto is a lashon yachid, so apparently it was oto and not an otam, which would have been a dual identity from the beginning. And Rabbi Abu explained that contradiction as saying the way in which we find the original creation story and the second creation story, that the same thing is true about Bereshis Bara Elohim with the Midas Hadin, as opposed to Biyom Bara Hashem Elohim, which is the Tziruf of Midas HaRachamim, is exactly the same over here. There's an Ola B'Machshava, and the Ola B'Machshava is always referred to as an element of Bria that sits at its roots. So that B'Tchilal Ta B'Machshava L'Vroto Shnayim, we do exactly the same thing according to the Rabbeinu Tam, when we talk about, literally in the Machzor, right? So we talk about the idea of Zehayom Tchilat Maasecha, as if today was the day that Adam was created, but he wasn't created. But it was Hayom Harat Olam, so the Yom Harat Olam is conception, and the conception of Adam was in that, and we literally talk about it as the conception is what lies at the roots of the actual, and because of that, we We literally relate to that on Rosh Hashanah as if it's an actuality, not to mention the fact that we literally view it as actuality in terms of measuring history from it and so on. I mean, we give it a name called Shnot Tohu because it's as if history extended backwards in time into Tohu, but it's real for us insofar as it's rooted in conception. Fine. I said, I mean, it's 12 a year. So even though there was Betchila al Tabe Machshava Livroto Shnayim, the way in the end it worked out, working things out is part of a process. So in the end, it was started off as one with a Zanav, and then it needed to be created one from the other and expanded into two. Okay, what about the Kohen Gadol Yomar who holds that it's a full identity? That explains why, I mean, this was a major operation, you know. I mean, this is like Siamese twin. Well, they're not exactly because they're different sexes, of course, but the idea is similar to separating these Siamese twins, right? So that's a big operation. So you would certainly need to do a lot of skin grafting. So it explains why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the surgeon, needed to be Vayizgor Basar Tachtena. But I mean, according to Man Yomar, who says, oh, it's just minor surgery, you know, you just need to build another identity from a tell. Why does it say that he needed to do a skin graft? Oh, come on, man. You expect HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do surgery that leaves areas that are scarred? Please. So obviously, Vayizgor Basar Tachtena was to make sure that the Makom HaChatach was not scarred, needed to look like it was completely natural. Omer is vid v'itamer of Yirmiyah, v'itamer of Nachum Bar Yitzchak, and that actually it's only the Makom Chatach according to that Mandi Omer, but it meant that it wasn't scarred. Now, what about the Mandi Omer who says it's a Zanav? That explains why when HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the entire picture of this woman, it says Vayiven. Vayiven sounds like you're really building something up, which wasn't there before. But if you hold, according to my number, Partsuf, I mean, there's no Vayiven. There's just separating out, right? I mean, I don't need to do a lot of surgery except for the grafts. I don't need to put in anything new. So what are the Vayivens? My Vayiven. And that was the sugi that we had before in Shabbos. That's Kerub Shimon ben Manasseh. The Dorish Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, why exactly? Remember, this is why we don't do hairdressing on Shabbos, because of binyan. And that we learn out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when it says, Vayiven Hashem Elokim et Atzilah, this means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Chava the first hair permanent, the first hairdo, permanent hairdo. So, I mean, he wasn't going to just give, what is this, like a Tarzan and James? I mean, what, this is ridiculous. If he's making a real chasana over here, I mean, she's got to look like $1 million, right? I mean, so where she's going to get the dress for the ball? And where is she going to get that beautiful hairdo and so on? You don't expect Chava to be wearing a sheitel, do you? So because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to be her hairdresser. So that was the Vayiven. Malamed Shekilah HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Chava, and only then presented her to Adam. And in fact, Bekarche Hayam, they still call a kliata, they call a braided permanent, a biniata. Ah, so that's what it means. A dover acher vayiven Hashem Elokim is actually making it similar to a binyan from the first. Because Amr Chisya, Amr Masi Satana, this teaches us, it needed to be kevinyan otsar. So in other words, the woman's structure is such that it would make it easier for her fundamentally to be able to support pregnancies in the same way that a storehouse. You always make sure that because of the extra gravitational problems of keeping things that get wider on top in a storehouse, it always has to be rochav milamata. Otherwise, you have all the weight on top, which will cause a lot of problems in support. So when people make storehouses, they're also intelligent enough to make it not as something that's going to be wide on top. It's going to be wide on the bottom, and it's thinner on top to prevent too much pressure. Kedei lekabel et haperot. So af ha'isha rechava milamata k'tzara milamala kedei lekabel et havlat. So that means that the woman has to have place for a womb in order to contain the vlad and becomes wider at that point. But Yaviyah El HaAdam, once we're talking about already the wedding, Then it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, actually after giving her the hairdo, he also performed the shush binut la'adam. So he took care of all of the, they didn't need to hire, what do they call them, wedding consultants. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the wedding consultant, planned out the seating arrangements and the music and so on and so forth. And he became the shush binut mikan legadol. From there we learn that a great person should be absolutely at ease at becoming the shush binut lekatan at a wedding, and he shouldn't feel that in some way this is a bizoyant for his kavod. It doesn't matter who you are, get involved in that chasana and make the chasan happy. So now getting back to the machlokas, and according to the Man D'Amar Partzuf, I'm just curious. I mean, that must have been a pretty sticky kind of situation. I mean, look, even Siamese twins have got to decide who goes first, right? I mean, so like, who goes first? So did the male side walk in front or did the female side walk in front? So Haiminav Sagi Beresha, Amr Nachum Bar Yitzchak. Well, I mean, it's only reasonable, is it not? In a, after all, a patronistic world. I mean, the Zohar had to go in front. Any woman will tell you that. Of course, the males would always insist on going front. But that's because of Derech Eretz, the Tanya. Lo Ya'alecha Damach Ori Isha Baderech. A person should not be walking behind a woman, even if she's his wife. It does not look proper. Because, I mean, the woman is supposed to be actually protected from being looked at. And even if it's his wife, it is not nice to have that level of exposure. So even if she's his wife and there's no iser in looking at her, and if a woman, here we're talking about if a woman who is an Eishes Ish, says Rashi, if a woman who is an Eishes Ish turns out to come in front of you on a path or on a bridge, then speed up and get around her so you can go in front of her. Now, this is very interesting because it's the Poskim are Medayik from here that if it's not an Eishes Ish, then this does not apply. In other words, if it happens to be that you're behind your own wife, that's fine. It's just that it isn't right to place yourself there because she deserves a little bit more cover than that. But that it basically, if it happens, you don't have to run ahead and so on. That's not nice either. But if it's an Eishes Ish, then you're not allowed to be looking at her. That's a whole different issue. So therefore, you start getting on studying. And if you go back of her on purpose, especially if you were going back of a woman who is walking through a river, because of that, she's got her clothes lifted up. So now you're going to be walking behind a woman in her panties in a river, and it's disgusting. So then that means that basically you're looking where you shouldn't be looking. Obviously, this is only referring to a case where she is asura to you. So she's an Eishes Ish. Tana Rabbanan, the same thing would be if somebody who's martzema otli shami odoliyada, forget about looking at her panties. If you take money and you give the money into this woman's hands because you want to get a close look at her. So you enjoy looking at her. So you're giving her the coins of the change in her hand. You get her to give you the money in order to get a close look at her. I don't care if you're a miyad liyad, meaning you're like Moshe Rabbeinu, who is makabel the Torah miyad liyad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. Lo yinakeh midina shel Gehinom. You're not going to get away with this. V'alav HaKatuv omer yad liyad lo yinakeh ra. Even if you are the hand-to-hand and you engage in hand-to-hand, you will not get away with Ra, and Ra is hell. So, lo yinakeh midina shel Gehinom. Omer Reb Nachman, you know, based on this, I mean, it appears that Manoach was really an Am HaAretz, because it says, Vayokum vayelech Manoach acharei ishto. I mean, what do you mean? He went and followed his wife, so he walked behind his wife, and he set himself up to follow her. And we said it's not Derech Eretz. He must have been an Am HaAretz. He didn't know this halacha, says the Gemara. Oh, come on. I suppose you're going to tell me that Elkanah was one of the Nevi'im and who's called an Ish Elohim. He was the Ish Elohim that came to Eli. He's an Am HaAretz also. Because it says, Vayelech Elkanah acharei ishto, right? So he's also an Am HaAretz, of course, because he was following his wife. And Elisha. It says that Elisha followed her. He was an Eishes Ish, for heaven's sakes. So he's, I mean, he was also, he was walking behind an Eishes Ish, right? Elisha Anavi. So what does it mean when he said he followed her? It means he followed her bakasha, or he followed her Eitza. That's what it means. So Okanachre Ishto is Achre Devarea, Achre Yatzata. Simon was moved in terms of Elisha. She needed him to be there, so he followed her request. So what do you think it means by Manoach? He followed her. It means he followed what it is that she said, that he can go and speak to the Malach. So fine. So you can't prove from here is an Amaretz. Reb Nachman was saying he's an Amaretz. Boy, is he an Amaretz. He's a total idiot. Afila be Rav Nami lo kara. I mean, he's not even a kindergarten student. I mean, any child knows the pasuk that says Vatokom Rivka vina arotea. What does it mean to say achare ha'ish? I mean, obviously, he was the one who knew how to go. If that's all that it's saying, so then the pasuk wouldn't have had to tell me that. But it's stressing that they were careful, even though he's the Eved and so on. So normally, obviously, in an ace of society, you know, ladies first. In fact, over here, it's stressing that they went achare ha'ish, well, only fnei ha'ish. Manoach didn't even make work that out, you know. So I guess he never even went to cheder. Is that what you thought? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, I'll tell you, if I had a chance to make a choice of walking behind a lion or behind a woman, this is a married woman again, I would rather walk behind the lion. And if I got a choice of walking behind a woman or behind some type of icon, I would definitely go behind the Ashes each. And if I had a chance of choosing between walking behind some people walking with a yoshke in their hands, and the alternative would go to walk behind the shul in the middle of a minion, I'd rather walk behind the yoshke and not have anybody think that I don't walk into a shul when they're davening and that I'm kaifer in their minyan, chas v'shalom, and they will say, I don't believe in tefillah. So everything, and this is such an important gemara, because, I mean, basically, it starts off by saying some type of absolute. And then what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, listen, it's all very nice to talk about the absolute and going to hell and all of that. But, I mean, obviously, it's contextual, and you need to make always a determination. Okay, but, I mean, what's really worse? You're thinking about, oh, my God, I can't possibly walk behind the woman. Yes, so what do you want to do? You want to walk behind the shul? You want people to think about you like you're someone that doesn't daven? You're kaifer and tefillah? That is always what these kind of issues are like. Please mute yourselves. I don't know who is doing this. Oh, yeah. I don't even see anybody who's not muted. Okay. So, very, very harsh of a point. Anyway, continuing in Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar and the human condition. The Omar, Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, you should know that Adam Arishan, because of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nozef in him. He was benidui. And because of that, he was holy druchin, v'shedim, v'lilin. It was these horrible, evil monsters and lilin and demons and so on that he was the father of. Because this v'yichi adam, sholshimu machanav ha'yolad b'dmutot samo, took him 130 years before he had a human child after that. Only then was it in his demut and selim, which is mashman until now. There were all kinds of other monstrosities that were coming from him. So I was thinking, wait a minute. Rabbi Meir says, look, all those years, Adam Arishan was doing tshuva. And Kivan Shira'ashi Nignasa Mital Yado, he saw the terrible damage that he did to the world. So he kept a tainis for 130 years straight. He wouldn't eat during the day. And he was porish from his wife for 130 years. And he was mala zarze to inim el besoro for 130 years. So he wore all these types of the same figs, but here he used the figs branches that they would scratch him and it would remind him of the way that he had acted. This he did for 130 years. If he wasn't sleeping with his wife, how did he father all of these monsters? He didn't father these monsters. We're talking about kikamrinana hu b'shichva zera de chazal unse. During those 130 years where he didn't have marital relations, so what happened to all of that shechva zera? It became actually monsters in the fact that he couldn't use it for reproduction. Another interesting thing is that if you're going to be relating to people and saying how wonderful they are, don't say too much in front of a person. So miksat shvachos shel adam omrim b'fanav. It is derech eretz to speak about a person, but not to make it sound like you're fawning over the person, and not to make it sound like you're trying to be machnif the person. And because of that, the correct way to speak is you could say good things about him, but don't overdo it. And when he's not there, that's the time to be Meshabeach and Kulon Shelo B'fanav. And we see this by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhaga vis-a-vis Noah. Because remember, obviously, what do we say? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fawning over somebody. But the point is that all of the Hanhagas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are there in terms, unbelievably, of Derech Eretz. How would I act if I were in your situations? And learning to interrelate the way you need to interrelate, because that's what you need to see in terms of my midas. So that means that the midas are themselves, of course, it's the whole issue of the Derech Hashem, as the Rambam explained. The midas are midas that make sense within the human context. And therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Noach, he says, you know, Otcha ra'iti tzadik lefanai bador hazeh, and just tzaddik. But when Noach wasn't standing there, and the pasuk is describing Noach, it doesn't only say that he's an ish tzaddik. It says, Noach ish tzaddik tamim haya bedorotav, which is much greater. And how come HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say that to him? Because you don't say everything to the person. Now, obviously, the implications here go also beyond simply the issue of chatifa, means in terms of the relationship per se. The Amr of Yirmiyah ben Elazar, my dichti vine ale zayit, taraf befia. What did it mean when back to Noach comes the Yonah and is carrying this message? The message is an ale zayit. What exactly is this the Yonah attempting to communicate? Well, the zayit is the word over here, taraf befia, is that the Yonah was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, give me teref, give me my mizonot. And you mizonotai mirorim kezayit. I'm much happier living on this very bitter tree. And but this means the tree. The tree of the zayit is extremely bitter. And I'd rather be able to live on that if it's connected to you and not to have the sweetest things like honey and to be dependent on these humans anymore, like Noah. And where do we see that? Because it says taraf. And it says, Hatrifeni lechem chuki. So Hatrifeni lechem chuki is a lashon of providing me with my needs. And therefore, this was a message about tiruf. Another thing Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar said is that ko ba'it shenishma'im bo divrei Torah balayla shuv eino necherav. So Rashi says balayla is because this is the time where people hear it. So remember, the Rambam has this whole beautiful halacha about ein adam lo midrov chokhmah so ela balayla, and if a person is going to waste his nights looking at movies or whatever, so then he'll be destroyed, and that house will not be destroyed if it's used for divrei Torah. Shenemar, we could be medayakis in the pasuk. Velo amar aye Elohai osai notein zmirot balayla. That the person who is Notein Zmirot Balayla will never have to ask, why did this happen to me? I mean, where is my creator? Why didn't he take care of me? He won't have any reason to cry because he was Notein Zmirot Balayla. Another mimer of Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar is, Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash Dayu La'olam Shishtamesh B'Shtei Otiyot. Even though it used to be when the Kohanim were in the Beit HaMikdash, and they were Mavarech, the Am, with the Shema Meforash, and there they were able to use the Shema, the real Shemot Hashem, after the Churban, we're left just with the two letters, which is Kibbeh Ka, and that's Kol HaNishama Ta'alel Ka, Haleluka. And that was Kol HaNishama, we're being Medayek, Tosis points out, the Lashon of Nishama, when the Churban has taken place and everything is Choruv, then it's enough to have Ka instead of the full Shema. The Amr of Yirmiyah ben Elazar, another thing that you see is that when Bavel was cursed to be destroyed, all of the neighbors of Bavel, because Oil Rasha, Oil Shechina, they were all damaged because of her curse, Mash Enkein. When the Aseres HaShvatim were cursed, Nitkala LaShomron, Yehuda was Midbarech. Where do we see that? Nitkala LaBavel, Nitkala LuShechineha, Dichtiv Samtia LeMorash Kipod V'Agmei Mayim. I'll turn Bavel into an area of these wild animals or porcupines and pools of stagnant water, which will destroy the areas around them also. Masha'inke nitkala la shomron, nitborchu shecheinei adichtiv, esamti shomron li'iasadeh. I will turn Shomron into what's left as a place to plant things as a sadeh, even though it's a churva, it's an e, but it's still a sadeh, and I'll make it into a place where you can plant lots of vineyards and a mokum of beautiful karamim as well, which of course is wonderful to be the neighborhood, Lamata Echarem.